So another couple of minutes on the quiz. Another minute or so on the quiz. Okay, I want to make sure you got your names on them and send them this away. Okay, so we have a blank star map, kind of like that one. And we're supposed to add all of these things to it. And the choice of which one's north is kind of arbitrary, because it could have been rotated. So it doesn't really matter exactly where you choose to be north. Everything else is relative. But I've never seen one that doesn't have north pointing towards the top and south pointing towards the bottom. And then comes maybe the surprising thing, right? If you look at the one that's on there, if you're used to a map of the United States, right? This is the East Coast and this is the West Coast, and of course this is North and South, but that's not how it works on a star map, right? So this is East and this is West. And it's just a matter of the fact that we make our globes looking down as kind of God's view on the earth, whereas we make our view of the sky looking down and up. So looking in different directions, which reverses the east and west. Zenith. So zenith is the center of the sky. So it's right at the center of this map. The meridian, that's kind of the most important line in the sky. That's the line that goes from north through the north celestial pole, through zenith, and back through south. Right, so there's a dinosaur, it's this sort of thing here. It's gonna split the sky in two. So it goes right like that. The celestial equator. So on these maps, there are two kind of these big circles. The circle that goes directly from exactly east to exactly west, that's the celestial equator. And here at St. John's, it's not going to go through zenith. It's going to be about split the difference between zenith and the southern horizon. So we've got a circle that goes from exactly east to exactly west. North celestial pole. here at St. John's, kind of split the difference between the zenith and the north point for the North Celestial Pole. Show the path followed by a star. So those are diurnal circles. Things rise in the east and they set in the west. So for example, like that. Or if you had a diurnal circle that was a so-called circumpolar star, one that's always above the horizon for us, it could look like that. Or you could have a really small diurnal circle that's just grazing the top of the southern horizon, kind of like Sagittarius does. So then we've got this pattern of stars in the sky, and the question is, how do we draw it? And, you know, when you take pictures, I guess you could, you know, you could hold the camera at an angle and have a picture like that, but usually we don't do that, right? Usually we make it orient our cameras and our heads so that, like, telephone poles stick straight up from the ground. So we want to take the piece of ground, which is right here, that's closer to that question mark, and we want to put it down. We don't want it to be at a crazy angle. So if we rotate this thing around, what we end up with is something that looks like that. Okay, questions? So remember kind of the longer story for what we just talked about, which is maybe the single most important thing to understand, is that when you're using this chart, you can, one way of orienting it is to put your eraser at zenith, and then let's say we're interested in what the Big Dipper is going to look like. Then drape your pencil over the Big Dipper, and then orient that pencil as if it were a telephone pole pointing at zenith, straight up and down, just like that. And then that's what the Big Dipper would look like over the northern horizon. Okay, so if things are close to zenith, it's kind of hard to say how things are going to be oriented. But if we're looking at something that's at all close to the ground, we're going to put the ground that's closest to the constellation below it, right? Straight below it. Right, so if we were going to look at this constellation here, we take the ground that is closest to it, and we put it down. So the great square of Pegasus is actually going to look like a diamond in our sky. Okay, questions on sky maps? So we got this long sheet of vocabulary, and we're going to be kind of working our way through it. And we were mostly working at kind of this center system, the so-called horizontal system last time. These sorts of things that we handed out last time, I'm going to call those things sky maps. This one here is perfect. So it shows exactly what the sky is going to look like above the observatory at St. John's at this particular time. All right, so the location in terms of the latitude and longitude accurate to an arc minute, an arc second, is all carefully recorded there. And here we have things that change a lot in time recorded, right? So for example, the moon over a month is going to be moving around, but at that particular time and place, the moon was exactly there. This sort of map, which sometimes called a monthly map, is kind of an average. It's not designed exactly for St. John's. It says it's good for 40 degrees latitude, which is kind of splitting the difference of the continental United States. And it's kind of good for September, but depending upon whether you're talking about the beginning of September or the end of September, it's not going to be so good. Things that change in time, like the moon, simply can't be recorded on this sort of map. Okay, but they're basically the same sort of thing. They're these sky maps where we're trying to map half of a sphere onto a flat piece of paper. And we're going to do that so that the center of the sky, zenith, is right at the center of the map. Okay, so center of the map is zenith. We can't draw it on this map, but the direction that's straight down, if we need a name for it, it's called the nadir. The meridian, again, is the line in the sky that goes from north through the North Celestial Pole, through zenith, and back through south, right? So it goes from north through the North Celestial Pole, which is this pretty close to the star Polaris, through zenith, and back through south. Vertical circle. So a vertical circle is any circle that goes straight up from the horizon. So anytime we have a line that goes straight up from the horizon, kind of like a telephone pole, we're talking about a circle that goes straight up perpendicular to the horizon, right? So it's going to go, it's a circle like this that goes through zenith. Okay, so the meridian is an example, a particular example of a vertical circle. The whole shebang rotates about once a day, so pretty much every star is going to rise, approximately speaking, in the east and set, approximately speaking, in the west. If a star is close to the axis of rotation, it'll just go around in a little circle. If it's far from the axis of rotation, it won't be above the horizon very long there in the south. Okay, so the whole shebang is rotating so that stuff on the east is going around to stuff on the west. Horizon, that's where the sky meets ground. Usually we don't mean the real horizon, which might be interrupted by buildings and trees and telephone poles, but kind of the mathematical horizon that you would have if you bulldozed the world into a plane. Altitude and azimuth. If we're looking at some spot in the sky, we can describe where we're looking by saying how far from north we have to turn and then how far up in the sky we need to go. So altitude is the angle from the horizon to the star along a vertical circle, and the azimuth is the angle from north to the base of that vertical circle. And we could measure those things in degrees, but usually for this class, for azimuth, you know, north, south, east, and west, northwest, something like that will serve just as well as a precise angle. So that means unless you turn the map, you're facing south.
Okay, yeah.
So if you decide you want to look at the east, what you're going to do is rotate this map so that the eastern horizon is down.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So if you decide that you want to look northwest, you're going to take this piece of the map and rotate it down. And then that'll be good for showing the stars that are more or less above the horizon in the northwest. And you'd have to, of course, you know, bend over backwards in order to see these stars that are over here. Okay. The ecliptic. So we noticed that a lot of these objects, ephemeral objects, right? So this is Saturn, Moon, Pluto, Neptune, Uranus, all of those guys are relatively close to this line in the sky. So it turns out that the planets follow an approximate path, all of them. They can see they can be a little bit above or a little bit below the ecliptic, but the ecliptic describes for us currently kind of the average spot where the planets are found. So you'll never see a planet in the Big Dipper. It doesn't happen. Planets have to stay near the ecliptic. So we talked about the North Celestial Pole. That's the thing that it all turns around. For us at St. John's, it's about 45 degrees above the northern horizon. So these, you know, just in order to have some kind of mnemonics for the sky, people have divided it up arbitrarily in terms of constellations. So the stars that are in a constellation have no particular relationship to each other. It's just as viewed from Earth, they happen to look like they're relatively close together. And in order to remember them, people usually put them together, put the bright stars of them together into stick figures, but there is no standard for those stick figures. There is a definite standard for the constellation. So around these stick figures, there would be definite borders that define exactly the region of the constellation. And so there is no spot between the constellations. Questions? Nobody lives in northern Minnesota. I bet somebody is insulted here.
Well, I'm insulting myself. But and then when you do look at the sky, and there are 100 times more stars than you see, so do they have more constellations for those, or are they just random stars?
So I guess your first question was, are the constellations kind of the brighter stars? And I mean, the answer is undoubtedly that's kind of how it started with the Greeks. But in the end, we wanted to have 100% of the sky mapped. Right? So we didn't want to have any blank spots between, let's see if I have a transparency of it. So 100% of the sky is in some constellation, in exactly one constellation. Here it is. I see it. I just need to dig down to it. So these are the actual boundaries of the constellations. Okay, so the constellations aren't just these stick figures. They're actually exactly defined borders. So just like, quote unquote, nobody lives in northern Minnesota, but it's Minnesota, right? It's not Canada. There's a definite dividing line between Canada and Minnesota. So kind of the same story. There may not be any bright stars like in that constellation, but it's still a region of space. So probably people started by kind of connecting together the bright stars, but these days, 100% of the things are related. So then you said when you go out north, for sure, you see more you see more dots, you see more stars. And that's really a combination of a couple of things. So the first thing is just getting dark adapted. If you go outside of a bright building, your eyes are used to the bright light, and it takes 20 minutes, half an hour being out in the dark before your eyes get adapted to see dim objects. So you're more likely to be in the dark, right, camping in Minnesota, than you are going to be walking around the campus of St. John's, where there's always at least a somewhat bright light around. And the other thing is that we have a fair amount of light pollution here from Minneapolis, from the Bell Banner. So the overall background light of the sky is brighter here than it is in northern Minnesota. So the stars are being shaded out, I guess that's the wrong word, are being brightened out by having the sky illuminated by all of these lights. So eliminate the lights and we can see dimmer stars. Let your eyes adapt to dark conditions and you can see more stars. Probably 100 times more is an overstatement, maybe about 5 times more. Yeah, that's a round number. I would have said 5,000, but yeah.
3,000 is what it said in the book.
Yeah. We just said it's going to be 5 times more in northern Minnesota. It varies. But yeah, that sort of number, a few thousand.
Yeah. But there's 88 official constellations.
Correct.
And I imagine that not every star in the sky that you can see is part of a constellation.
No, so just like every piece of the continental United States, whether it's inhabited or not, is in the United States. Every piece of the sky is part of one of these constellations.
Oh, okay, so all the stars that are within the outline of it?
Yeah, so every star that's inside this box belongs to the constellation Camelardis. And it's not a name you've ever heard of because you can see there are no bright stars in the constellation Camelardis. So it's a somewhat recent constellation. Where in contrast to, if we can find it, there's the Big Dipper, right? So it's a big region of sky that's the Big Dipper.
So the constellations are just quadrants in the sky.
A little bit louder?
They're like quadrants.
So I guess I don't like the word quadrants because it implies dividing things up into four, but they are areas that have definite borders, just like the globe is divided up into states that have definite borders. And there are big cities and there are small cities, but any three people in northern Minnesota are in Minnesota, not in Canada.
So the Big Dipper is just the stars in the Big Dipper, but the Big Dipper is part of Ursa Major, which is the entire constellation, I guess.
Yeah, so first of all, you have exactly said the right thing, which incidentally, this is a distinction I don't usually much care about. So technically speaking, the Big Dipper is not a constellation, it's what's called an asterism, just a collection of bright stars. So the real constellation is Ursa Major. So for asterisms, they don't have definite borders. So it's hard to say. So for example, currently what I was doing last night is looking at an exploding star that the newspapers are describing as being in the Big Dipper. And it's really a little bit above the Big Dipper, it's about there. But the Big Dipper really isn't a definite thing anyway. So it's in the constellation Ursa Major. More questions? Okay, so what we have today, which you should have in your hands now, I would call a star finder. It's labeled a star and planet locator. And it's basically the same sort of thing that we've been dealing with, except this guy is designed to be good for any old date. And since the stars rise and set, it has to have a moving set of stars. So you can see that the whole set of stars rotates about this gormet, which is supposed to be where the North Celestial Pole is. And you can see it's kind of at the tail of the Little Dipper, just where Polaris is supposed to be. Because the stars here have to cover more than half of a sphere, right? Because more than half a sphere is above our sky during a year, there's going to be more distortion in this sort of map than there is in the sky maps that we've been dealing with. And you can see that distortion because the circle of the horizon is no longer circular, right? It's kind of this egg-shaped thing. So as we get to the edge of the big circular map, that's where things have been stretched out in order to squish them onto a flat piece of paper. So if you look, for example, the actual east point is not where you might guess. It's not at the end of these ovals, because the region between east and south has been expanded out. So east is actually there where the solid line of the celestial equator hits the horizon. Okay, so this is 90 degrees of azimuth between north and east, and this much larger distance between south and east is also 90 degrees of azimuth. This is just bigger because we have distortion. The edges have been squished out, just as if you took an orange peel and tried to squish it flat, it would have to rip along the edges. It would be expanded along the edges. So to start out using this, then we have to set it for a date and time. And why don't you set it for September 15th at 9 p.m.? So you do that by putting the date September 15th right next to 9 p.m. Notice the difference between the a.m.s and the p.m.s. So I'm taking September 15th and I'm putting it next to 9 p.m. And when you do that, you should see something that is kind of like this. Right, so the Big Dipper should be oriented the way we've been seeing the Big Dipper, right, up in the upper right-hand corner. So the solid white line, that's going to be our celestial equator, and it's going to hit the horizon exactly at the east and the west points. Of course, the edge of the star map, that's the horizon. You see a dashed line that is the ecliptic. That's where we expect the planets are going to show up. And of course, since the planets move around, we can't have them as a definite spot on this star finder. So it claims to be a planet finder. How do we find the planets? Well, if you look at the back, which actually looks different on yours than it does on mine, you'll see a list of the planets and the constellation they're in. So if you see a bright dot that's in the constellation, say Capricornus, you can look in the back to see which planet that is. So what I've described is true for Mars through Saturn, but if you look for what's true for Mercury and Venus, instead of having the constellation, they have evening or morning. And we'll talk more about that. Those two planets are usually visible only at sunset or sunrise, and that's what instead of telling you the constellation it is, which usually isn't too helpful because it's often bright when you're looking at them, they're telling you whether to look for them at sunrise or sunset. You also notice this kind of stippled region that's listed as the Milky Way. So particularly if you're dark adapted and in a dark place like northern Minnesota, you'll see that while there are lots of bright stars here, there's kind of a fuzzy region, which is the Milky Way. And what Galileo discovered is what the Milky Way in fact consists of is just zillions of stars, zillions of faint stars that are packed pretty close together. So this fuzzy line across the sky, that's the Milky Way. Okay, so this guy works just like the other map, except this one we can set for any old time and place, so we don't have to print out a copy. The cost of that is there's more distortion. So if you look, for example, what the constellation Sagittarius looks like here, and you look at what Sagittarius looks like on the star maps that we handed out yesterday, you'll see that this guy has been stretched out this way. It doesn't really look like that. So the shape of constellations, particularly the shape of constellations that are near the edge of the boundary, they can be pretty distorted by this process. Okay, so in a second we'll go and break up into groups of three and do some projects with the Starfinder, but let's make a little bit more progress on this list of vocabulary and take a look at the start of the vocabulary. So I think last time I defined great circle and little circle. So a great circle is any circle that goes the big diameter of the sphere. So a great circle has to have as its center the center of the sphere. Smaller circles have their center that is not at the center of the sphere, and they're correspondingly smaller. So almost all diurnal circles are small circles, unless the star we're talking about happens to be on the celestial equator. The meridian we can think about as being part of a great circle if we extend it below the horizon. Same thing for any vertical circle. If we extend it all the way around, then it's also a great circle. So the kind of the feeling you might get going out at night is as if the stars are all, you know, at some distant spot, and that globe that contains those stars is gradually rotating. So this kind of imaginary idea of the stars being connected to a crystalline sphere, it works pretty well, right? It's obviously wrong, right? You can fly forever to the forever towards a star and not run into anything. But it was an idea that clicked with the Greeks and was believed for millennia. We'll talk about how people gave up that idea. So believe it or not, theologians actually worried about how the Spirit of Christ could go through the celestial sphere, right? It looked problematical to them. Okay? No problem at all. There's nothing actually there. But as a mathematical idea, it works pretty well to think about the stars as all being connected to a sphere. And then in the end, next time, we can establish things like longitude and latitude to map where those stars are on that sphere. Okay, so the celestial sphere is this kind of imaginary idea that the stars are all on a sphere and that sphere is rotating around the Earth, which is causing those stars to rise in the east and set in the west. And so once we've got a sphere, then the idea of poles and equators makes sense. Okay, so the celestial sphere is an imaginary idea to us, but the Greeks probably believed it was literally there. And it's just a way for us of thinking about the stars as all being mappable on a surface.
One question. Just quick, like the sun will rise, like east-west, granted it's different parts of the horizon, east-west, you know? So do the stars follow that same thing, or do they always rise? Do they always move due east when the exact same constellation rises?
That's a great question. So if we look at your Starfinder and you rotate it along, you'll see that where stars are determines where they rise and set. So if you pick out a star that is south of the solid line that is the celestial equator, you know, so for example, the constellation Sagittarius, you'll see that here it is, it's in the east, so it's going to be rising over there. So it's going to rise not exactly in the east. And as I bring it around over here, it's going to set over here not exactly in the west. These constellations up here are never going to set, right? They're always going to be above the horizon, so-called circumpolar constellations. So depending upon where you are on the celestial sphere, you could be rising all the way basically north to rising basically all the way to south. So any place along the eastern side, that's where you could be rising, depending upon your location on the celestial sphere. And for a star, during your lifetime at least, that would be a fixed quantity. So Rigel is always going to rise at exactly the same spot in the east and set in exactly the same spot in the west. But you said that's not the case with the sun. So if you've ever just followed shadows, you know that in the summer, the sun is rising towards the north of east and it's setting towards the north of west. And as we go towards the equinox, the sun is rising and setting closer and closer to exactly east and west. And then in the winter, it's going to be rising and setting kind of like Sagittarius, pretty much in the south. So what that tells us is the sun doesn't have a fixed location on the celestial sphere. It's moving around. So all of the planets, sun, they stay in pretty much, on a day, they stay pretty much in the same position on the celestial sphere, but over a year they're going to move around. Is that pretty good? So let me say one more thing, and that is, it turns out the definition of the ecliptic is exactly the path of the sun on the celestial sphere. So the sun, we said that the planets might be a little bit above the ecliptic or a little bit below the ecliptic, but they're always near the ecliptic. The sun is always on the ecliptic, and it's on different spots on different days. So it moves about a degree a day on the ecliptic.
I was just going to say that's because they're so close to the week, that's why they change around.
Yeah, that's a great observation. So the things that are in the solar system are relatively close to us, and so as actually the Earth moves around, they seem to be in different spots. And of course, the planets themselves are actually moving around. But if we had a distant star that was moving as much as Jupiter, from our point of view, we wouldn't see it.
Shouldn't Jupiter be quite a bit brighter in the sky than like Uranus and Neptune?
Yes, and it is. So, but you don't want to kind of take that too far, because, so I think your argument is that Jupiter's closer to us, and therefore it should look brighter. So that's the other piece of it. So I was going to point out that Mars is closer to us than Jupiter, but Jupiter is actually brighter than Mars because it's way smaller than it. So size and distance both count. Jupiter, because it's huge, and Venus, because it's close, those tend to be the brightest of the planets.
And would they also be much brighter than a lot of the stars? Because how far away the stars are and how Jupiter is...
So Jupiter's always way brighter than any star.
Oh, okay.
But like the, again, it's a matter of distance and size. So most stars are bright. Oh boy, it's a statement that you don't want to make, because most stars, the set of stars is actually infinite, and we can see maybe 5,000 of them. So, but in terms of stars that you think about, all of those are brighter than Pluto. Pluto is actually way below what you could see with your naked eye. So both distance and size matter. More questions? Okay, so let's break up into groups of three and work on a project with your star finder. So are you a group of three? You're almost a group of three. You're going to join with somebody, or you're going to be a cheaty group of three. You're going to shortchange me. And I take it, I see three. I see two, and I can see why you're lazy and don't want to move. So I think it's if you saw something kind of late at night, like at midnight or something like that, generally speaking, over here, probably Jupiter.
Okay, and then Mars was more towards the lake?
No, I don't think Mars is anywhere around.
That was, I think, Neptune or Uranus?
No, you can't see really Neptune with your naked eye.
So was it Uranus then?
No. You can just barely see. I have never seen Uranus with my naked eye. You can if you're really, if you know where to look, but it's not at all noticeable.
We had the Google Sky Map show, which was very nice. And it said it was right off the dock.
I think it must have been a star.
And then it just said, like,
what time of day?
It was like 12.
You don't have your phone?
No. Yeah. So there's a very bright star that is currently below the horizon, but I don't think it would be up even at midnight.
So I don't know if this is it, though.
So I'm puzzled. I can't think of what it would be, but Jupiter is kind of right about there, and it will rise. We will see it in this class in November.
Jupiter. Well, you can see one planet right now, can't you? We were like, this is about the view.
Well, you can see that all of those dots are pretty much planets, but all of those planets are pretty dim.
It went like right in here. Okay. It was pretty bright. Remember, we're looking at the Big Dipper kind of shot, and it was back here. It was like a really bright star. I said it was one of the planets.
Well, if it's near the Big Dipper, it can't be a planet.
No, it was like. See, this is what the Big Dipper looked like to us, and it was straight to our right, and maybe back a little bit. So that would have been.
So you're saying it's over here someplace?
Yeah, like I don't know how you.
But that's you have to go a long way from the Big Dipper to get to where the ecliptic is. So, right, because the planets have to be along the ecliptic. So this would be, you know, basically 180 degrees going towards the right.
And this is the moon right here.
Yeah, but this is the moon then. I mean, the moon is obvious, right? Yeah. If you and it is up at night,
right, yeah.
But you would have known it.
We're saying, like, say we're facing, and this is the view we have of the Big Dipper. We found all these constellations.
Mm-hmm. So you were doing the home lab too?
No, we were just.
Oh, you're just practicing. That's exactly what home lab two is. Finding those constellations.
And then, like, say over our, maybe we just are. It'd probably have been our 4 or 5 o'clock. Or it was even just directly 3 o'clock, maybe. And it said it was one of the planets. How would you do that? How would you say?
So you're saying up here someplace?
No, this is. Well, say this is my 12 o'clock, and it would have been like here from us, like straight right. But how would you do that on this circuit?
So straight right is, you know, going along here. So if you were to turn, if you were facing the Big Dipper and you were to turn 90 degrees, that's what you would see. You can see there's no piece of the ecliptic there, so it can't be a planet.
I don't know.
All of these labels on this map, like what are the different words?
So those are the so-called astrological symbols, and I have to get my glasses if I'm going to. I'm not sure. So this guy's Saturn, Moon, Pluto, Neptune, Uranus.
Did we see Pluto?
No.
No, I thought it was Saturn.
Saturn sets, so you can see it's in the west. I haven't noticed Saturn, and it certainly would be set would be below the horizon at midnight.
Then whoa!
I have no idea what we saw. Then it must have been.
Maybe it was an alien. No, but I thought your phone said it was.
So, there are a lot of bright stars in Perseus, but not planet bright. But in any case, if I were going to guess, I would guess it was something in Perseus. Because that matches what you said, about 90 degrees.
It was probably the brightest thing we saw all night.
Well, besides Jupiter. I thought Jupiter was bright.
Well, maybe it was Jupiter. Where was Jupiter?
Wasn't that Jupiter, like, twice.
Over, like, the prep school? Kind of, that one, the
so Jupiter would have been even further along.
Did we look at Jupiter twice?
I don't know.
Could be.
We were on some pretty crazy nothings. I mean, but no. All right.
I learned a bunch of constellations. We could see a constellation, which is pretty cool.
So was the moon was still up at midnight,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the moon was just, it was dropping.
We should yeah. It's about half a moon, isn't it now?
Yeah, a little over. Is it going, I don't know, is it getting bigger?
It gets bigger.
Mm-hmm. So now would be, the next, probably, we want to do like 11 laps in a row.
For that
11 sketches.
Oh.
Now would be the best time to start sketching.
Now is a good time to start sketching, but not particularly at night, because why sketch at night when you can sketch during the day? So the moon should be up, I think, at like 4 p.m. today. I can also, we can. So, 1 second, and we can take a look at what things look like. So, this shows the moon pretty close to setting. And if you were looking, so there's the Big Dipper.
Yeah.
And there's Jupiter. So, it's more than 90 degrees, but I bet you were looking at Jupiter.
Okay.
There's a fairly bright star here called Capella.
Okay.
And it I guess conceivably could have been that. Here's this bright star that's in Perseus that I was saying was another candidate. But I bet you saw Jupiter twice.
Okay.
Because it is very bright.
Okay, that would probably be the one we saw. Yeah, we were just like right out in front of the Abbey, basically, looking. But like, does this thing, over the course of the night, does it go like that? Or is it always, would it always look upright to it?
So it's always going to have the same distance because it's got a point at that star. So it's going to go like this.
Okay.
So, you know, like 6 hours in the future. Ah, I didn't hit it.
Well, you should do like 12 o'clock last night.
That was 12 o'clock last night. Yep.
Okay.
Zero. So that's okay. Where it's going to be 6 hours later. So it's going to go around like that in a big circle.
So when we, for like this thing we're doing, when we put it at the 5th of September here, it's like we're standing right here and looking, we'd orient it this way, so this is how we would see all this?
No. So this is, so once you've set that, then this is just like the map we have. If you want to look at this constellation, you take your pencil and you...
Okay.
Drape it over that. You want to look at this constellation, boom. So you want to look at this constellation.
So the Great Square of Pegasus looks like that to us on September 5th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, thank you.
So if we do the first one, this is for today's date, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we'll get to 10, 9, 8. Okay, so if we look at, let's say, we go to Great Square, what do we look at from, so this horizon line here?
Yep, so remember, zenith, drape over,
okay.
Make it vertical.
Oh, okay.
Looks like that. Looks
so
like
we
a
go
diamond.
From the middle of here.
Yep, that's where zenith is.
Okay, I know. Maybe this was.
No.
Okay.
All
right.
Nope. So, like, I think I believe all of your drawings. They look pretty accurate to me.
Okay.
So that's what Bodies is going to look like, and Big Dipper. It's going to look like that. So, look to me like all of your drawings were okay.
Okay.
Cool.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey there. We do have a question again on this is like kind of like review, right? Yeah. So do the same thing when we're driving.
It's exactly the same thing. So put your eraser at zenith and drape it over the Big Dipper.
Okay.
That's not zenith.
No.
So first of all, actually you're not set to the current date and time.
Okay. So 9 p.m.
That's right. Give me boots. You should all have the boots.
Okay. So eraser at zenith.
So this isn't zenith.
That's not zenith. That's the North Celestial Pole. That's what it's rotating about, right?
Okay.
So zenith is where?
Straight up.
Okay, so it's the center of the sky. So where's the center of the sky? How can that be the center? It's closer. It's real close to that piece of sky. Yeah, center of the sky has to be the center.
Okay.
So drape that over the constellation Big Dipper. It's actually there. And now orient your pencil like it's a telephone pole. And that's what it would look like. Make sense?
Yep.
You guys are all good?
The weird thing is, like, we don't move. We just sort of, like,
looks okay. I guess I don't need to wear this. You guys got a question?
Yeah.